I went to a nightclub, and they chose the geekiest nightclub in Leeds. What is it? Cafe something or other. But they had Star Wars memorabilia all over the walls.
Yeah, so I know you were.
And it was very, very cool. And they had Battlestar. No, they had Back to the Future on sort of TVs. And yeah, at that point, I stopped paying attention to the dancing and the music.
Yeah, that nightclub, Luke. The guy that runs it has another one in Manchester.
Yeah, he does.
My friend is having a reception to his wedding at the one in Manchester.
Oh my god!
The one in Manchester's near Victoria Station, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I used to drink.
Not been for a while. Yeah, it's fun.
Small world.
Yeah. Oh no! Now I've got it's a small world for all in my head. Damn you, Zoe.
Let's just kick this off. Let's kick it off.
Okay.
Before Matt starts singing.
The Webcomics Company Podcast. Visit www.webcomics.co.
Hello, good evening, whatever time it is there for you. This is the Webcomics Company Podcast. I'm Zoe Kirk-Robinson, and I'm here with three fantastic people who I'll now introduce. First up, we have Luke Healy of SwanneeNook.com.
Yo, it's me.
Next up, we have Luke Searle of LukeSearle.com.
Hello, I am Luke Searle of LukeSearle.com.
And last but not least, we have Matt Dyson of MattHasAWebsite.com.
Insert witty catchphrase here.
We're talking about copying. How much is too much? But first, Matt's just been to a convention. Matt, would you like to tell us about it?
Yeah, sure. I'll try and actually speak with words this time. I was at London Film and Comic Con this weekend. It was a lot of fun. I miss you guys. I really want you guys to come to more conventions with me, but hey, it was a lot of fun. It was very, very tiring, but it was interesting. I don't know if many of you have been to LFCC before, but it's usually in Earl's Court. Now, there's a big event in London this year. It's called the Olympics, and it seems to be messing everything up venue-wise, and it seems to be... I might be pronouncing it wrong. Is it the Olympics?
Okay,
with rings and telling people they're not allowed to sell chips or something. Due to that, we've had to move venues for LFCC this year, and it's not in Earl's Court anymore. Rather ironically, it's actually in the Olympia. I found that no end of amusing. But it's the first time I've been to an Olympia for an event. It was in the Grand Hall at the Olympia, which apparently has had bits done to it recently. I tell you what, it's a fantastic venue. I think somebody said to me this weekend, it's almost like an aircraft an aircraft hangar even, made sweet, sweet love to a greenhouse, and that's kind of what came out. And it's a beautiful... Essentially, it looks like an aircraft carrier with aircraft carrier hangar. My words don't work. With glass bits in the roof, so you get a lot of natural light in there, and it's very, very big. They're trying to have a lot more of a comics presence at LFCC over the last.
Oh! What on earth was that?
That's just been turned into a Doctor Who villain there. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So you've been sort of eaten by a xylotrip or something.
Yeah, this is hilarious. Oh my god. So it was a good weekend, eh, Matt? Oh, good to hear.
We're still here. Can you hear us?
This is the funniest glitch that's happened to us yet.
Right, and now let's start again. Now my mic's been fixed, and I don't apparently sound like a Cyberman anymore. It's quite funny, I had everybody else laughing at me for a few minutes. But yes, London Film and Comic Con was very good. They're trying to get a lot more comic people like ourselves involved over the next few cons. I think they've seen what's happened in other cons. And
it seems to be, compared to even MCM, it's very much we are getting a lot of celebrities here from films and TV series, sci-fi almost, mostly. So there
very
was, like,
much so. It's the Showmasters thing. The Showmasters are the organizers of this convention, and it's what they do best. They started it off a long, long time ago with the Collectomania conventions, where they tend to get essentially C-list and down celebrities, the odd B-list celebrity now and again. One year they got the entire hall of all of the Hobbits, which was quite funky. And every now and again they'll get somebody really good, but that attracts the crowd, and then you get dealers as well. And for the last year or two, they've started accepting comicsy people like us. Nice. And it does tend to be really well, because, well, as you all know, we do tend to have a lot of things in common with the geeky crowds that go to these sorts of conventions. They tend to be the people that tend to read our sorts of comics as well.
Women in common with the geeks? I've never noticed.
for people considering going, what's sort of the footfall, maybe relative to another convention that people might
know? I was going to say, it's an interesting thing. We had a chat in the pub on Saturday night of how you actually discuss amongst other comic people how good a con is against anything else. Because in the industry, it's considered vulgar in a lot of places to talk actual numbers, you know, to talk what sort of, you know, takings you make and this, that and the other, because people take more and or less than other people, depending upon the quality of the comic, as well as the quality of the convention. So we devised in the pub, the way of doing it is, we pick a convention that we all go to, and we describe how the convention is in relative to that. So we were all describing it all as how does it relate to an MCM? And for me, it was about 2/3 of an MCM. And for a lot of other people there, it was at least 2/3 of an MCM, if not a full MCM in terms of profits.
Not bad.
So I am unfamiliar with MCM, having not attended. Is that, is MCM like the gold standard? That's your tops, or...
Yeah, MCM's essentially my money con, and I know it is for a lot of other people, mainly because of the sheer numbers. MCM gets close on 50,000 people in 3 days, and I'm thinking at least 3/5 of that on the Saturday.
Wow.
So it's a big, big, busy con. So if you're going to make the money, if you're going to... get yourself sorted and sell to a public, you should be able to do it at MCM. It very much is the deep end if you're starting out, but once you get yourself established, it's the thing that you kind of measure things against.
So then London Film Comic Con ranks quite well, 2/3.
I'd say that profits wise London Film and Comic Con is currently my second this year, and I would suspect it would end up staying like that. It depends how busy Thought Bubble gets.
In terms of the clientele, the type of clientele, it's going to be... I'm guessing it's not going to be if you have a very serious diary comic about your adventures in the financial sector.
a lot of people there see the game. You tend to get people that are coming out of the guests area. That's where the main throughput traffic was coming from. A lot of people that were on that row tended to do better than the people that were outside that row. I actually had a bit of a bad table placement, but I still did okay. There's There are a number of cosplayers there, not nearly as many as something like MCM, but they do exist. In fact, I will give a link to Zoe to pop in the show notes of a music video that a lot of cosplayers did over the weekend to a tune called I Want to Be a Superhero, which is quite amusing. So looking at that, you can actually see in the background the con itself, so you can get a good idea as to the atmosphere.
Cool.
But yeah, it was very enjoyable, and as I say, the organisers seemed very receptive to us, seemed to really genuinely want us there, which is more than can be said for a few other conventions, I will not name names, and seemed very receptive as to what they can do for us.
Cool. Yeah, I hope if people want to know more about the conventions, email in, comment on the comment on web. .co or send us an email, because basically whenever any of us go to a convention, we'll give a little report afterwards and let you know how it is. I guess we can try and pitch you towards people who maybe haven't been to a particular convention before or haven't been to any conventions before and are looking to start out, and also we can just pitch you once at a terrible you probably won't do that.
If I've learned anything from Irish radio, it's that people love listening to people complaining. So, yeah, we should go for that. Just complain all the time. Complaints.co.
About conventions, if you're trying to attend them as an artist, is you don't bite the hand that feeds you. There are some conventions that will definitely do things that are that need to be flagged up and need to be said something about. But yelling about that in public isn't always the best way to go about it, especially if you're making profits from those conventions and you rely on those profits.
Yeah, there are a few conventions that basically when I was considering getting back into the convention circuit, that they were just red flags all over the place. It's one of the reasons I don't do conventions at the moment. There, I won't mention them here because I think they're still running conventions in the same way. But yeah. I can understand why you wouldn't want to bring certain things up when you go to them.
Well, sure, there I can see your conduit. I'm out of the continent. Just give me your notes. I'll complain about stuff on your behalf.
Bad the last couple of years, and admittedly, some of the ones you will have heard things about, and people at home listening to this might be thinking exactly of the conventions we're mentioning. And yeah, some things have happened. Some things have gotten better since Big happened. Some things haven't gotten all the way better, but it's we're talking very, very vague now. I'll get to the topic of today's conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
let's be honest.
Okay, yeah. Our topic for this week is copying others. How much is too much? I want to start this off by getting everyone onto the same page, to use a horrible business phrase. So let's start off by asking, what is copying?
Copying is taking the credit or somehow profiting from somebody else's work, creative endeavours, without their permission, generally. And in my opinion, it is basically theft. Because ideas are all we really have in this industry, and if you start stealing other people's, then it's bad, and I will hunt you down and destroy you. Okay, maybe not, but I'm probably going to have quite a hard line on my definition of copying, but we'll see.
No, that's fair enough. Anyone else want to put in their two cents?
Yeah, I'm not sure what I consider copying. I don't know how harsh I'm going to be about it. So I'm ready to be swayed either way by the arguments on this week's podcast. So audience, I am you. I'm coming to this fresh because I'm not really sure. I'm not sure what I think is copying. So I'm ready.
Well, it depends where you draw the line, really, because there are a lot of people that say out there that there's no such thing as a new story, there's no such thing as a new joke, so it depends exactly where you draw the line on what is something that's been a creation of yours, or what's something that's just a rehash of a joke that's been around since the dawn of time.
I have to disagree with that kind of statement when people say, oh, there's nothing new under the sun. So, yeah, you might have not created anything new under the sun, but some of us sit around for a long time trying to think up new things.
I mean, there's literally blatant copying of taking somebody else's image, scrubbing out their name, and putting yours. I think none of us are going to come down on the side of that.
Yeah, that's outright plagiarism, that's just bad.
Not even copying. It's plagiarism. I guess the grey area, which we're probably going to debate over, is maybe using a joke which is perhaps could be considered almost to be in the public domain, or using very familiar settings. Zoe, you used the example of the standard video game comic setup.
Yes, two guys on a couch, which unfortunately is also a standard sitcom setting if you think about Friends or Men Behaving Badly or coupling and things like that. The majority of the time they're sitting on a sofa.
That's such an established format, though, that picking it up is essentially not copying. It's like a, you know, it's like any kind of genre fiction, really. You know, if you want to say that that's, you know, it's like saying, oh, don't write a fantasy novel. Which actually, oh my god, I have such strong feelings about genre fiction, but I feel like I'm jumping the gun. I'll let you guys go for a second because I'm going to be really annoyed about that. But go on, sorry.
Yeah, that is definitely something I was going to come to. When does something that's been copied so much become part of the setting? Because I have to agree, the sitcom setting with the sofa is standard now. The gaming setting with the guy sitting on the sofa being smart Alex is standard, but it wasn't always.
We're all familiar with TV tropes here, right?
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with TV tropes, go to tvtropes.org.
No, don't.
And there goes the rest of your evening and the next morning.
Don't. Rest of your week.
It is actually impossible to produce any work of fiction that doesn't involve tropes. And they're not bad things. They're things to be usually played with. And it is literally impossible. There is an article on TV Tropes describing this. So to have elements in common with other fiction is not a bad thing. I think it's more explicit things and more specific things.
It's sort of, again, you know, where do you draw the line? When is some too much? You know, when is too much?
Yeah.
So, I guess that's really where we're going to go with this.
Yeah.
I think, you know, initially that I think we're all going to agree on this point that copying is so weak. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just dumb. And when people copy, that they tend to copy stuff that's really successful or really popular. And that's just really pathetic in my view. Like, okay, I'll do my genre fiction thing now and just get it out of the way. I hate genre fiction. It is so dumb. It is so stupid. And I hate it beyond recognition. If someone sat me down and said, here, read this fantasy novel, it's set in a land that's like medieval England and it's got elves and dwarves, I would take that book and I would rip it in half and then I would punch them because it's so dumb. Yeah.
And now we've alienated half our audience.
I love you guys.
But if you're going to do some sort of fantasy, do it. Do something new. Like, you're literally like, I could do anything I want. Better have dwarves in it. Like, that just gets on my nerves. And the sections and bookshops full of it. And it's just no. Just no. Okay? No.
I think there is probably a larger domain of space to play with in those tropes. What I'd say with comics, though, is if you are an independent comic publisher, why do superheroes... Because DC and Marvel do it, and they've done it for 70 years, and they've done almost every storyline. I think almost all of the inversions to superheroes stories have been done as well by the main publishers over 70 years, and it just confuses me why there are so. I mean, like, obviously they probably sell, but it seems
that's the reason.
This isn't really copying. This is just your choice of domain.
which is something that Ben Chamberlain of Supermassive Black Hole A Star was mentioning on our comments section, in fact. Shall we just go straight into one of the comments?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, Ben says, in regards to the guy's couch video games babe formula, I suppose some people copy that because they think they can cash in on its popularity and get rich quick. But a lot of the comics I see doing it appear to be doing it just because they can't think of anything else to do. It's the type of comic they've been reading, so when they want to do a comic, it's the type of comic they do. Similar to people who've grown up reading superhero comics, making a superhero comic themselves. Manga fans make their own manga-like comics, etc. I tend to think it's due to more to a lack of knowledge of other genres and approaches than anything else. Or they just really, really, really like it more than anything else out there.
People like to emulate what they like, obviously. So if you're someone who reads superhero comics and really enjoys them, you know, it's kind of natural to want to do superhero comics. It's just not very exciting.
I mean, it is something which works quite well with the medium, because you can draw large fantastical scenes. It's a very, very specific genre, which is
bafflingly specific.
I think Aaron Dearest did a thing like it's as if all written fiction was pirate romance novels. This is Aaron Dearest of Dresden Kodak. And when you sort of, if anything new came along, people go, well, why doesn't this fit into the pirate romance genre? And so people ask, so do you read books? No, I'm not really into pirate romance. And it's just very, very specific.
And, it's like all teenage fiction was supernatural romance. Wait.
Oh, there you go. That's some pretty topical comments.
Teenage fiction. To be honest with you, all of those books should have one thing in them. And it should be like, you open it up, and a big boxing glove comes out and punches you in the face.
This is harsher than even... I'm saying you can write a good story. If you're good at writing characters and good at writing stories, you'll probably produce a fairly good story of whatever specific subgenre you go for. But I would like to see you, if you are that person, do something really interesting.
Yeah, it's a case of you are likely to read the kind of things that interest you and excite you and you actually enjoy reading, then that's also naturally the kind of things that you're more likely to write, because it is, as you've already established, the kind of thing that you enjoy. But that doesn't stop you from putting your own twist on things, and because you know the genre well and because you know that area well, it almost gives you that little extra ability to know what's already out there, and it gives you that little bit of a responsibility to avoid the more common and cliched tropes that are out there. I know we all are likely to hit the odd cliched thing now and again, but as long as that's not all you're writing, then you've got to expand it a little bit, especially if it's something that you really know well.
I think the best example I can think of is Rice Boy by Evan Dam, because he clearly is influenced heavily by the fantasy, you know, fantasy genre. But man, if that isn't a unique comic, you know what I mean? There's nothing like that, or at least before he made it, there was nothing like it. And, you know, it's clearly built on the classic sort of hero's journey story, and it's set in sort of a medieval-ish world, but also there's robots and these crazy creatures, and it just, you know, it works because it's new, and it was really popular, so, you know.
I'll have to sit down and actually read that at one point. So would I be right in thinking there, Luke, that you would say that was an example of, instead of copying, but being influenced and taking that influence and running with it properly?
Yes, that's it doesn't need to, you know, nothing's going to be like a brand new blank slate creation, because that's just literally impossible. And, you know, there are people who say it isn't, but I think it is. So if you're going to do something, you know, be aware, be self-aware, you know what your influences are, know where you're coming from, but don't do something that's so straightforwardly exactly the same. Like, oh, do something new. Like, you know, Lord of the Rings is a good example because, you know, one, because it's had so many copycats, but also because, you know, Lord of the Rings is a satire of Macbeth. So Tolkien reads Macbeth and sees all these things and he says, you know, I don't like that, I don't like this, or... so he takes that sort of story and then pushes it further and makes it new, makes it his, you know?
Yeah, he found his own voice.
Exactly.
I was not aware of that.
Oh, yeah, it's a blatant satire. To the point where in one interview or in a letter, I can't remember which, he mentions that when Macbeth is told that he'll be king until the Dunsinane Forest comes to... Oh, the forest comes to Dunsinane, and... It turns out that actually it's not the forest coming, it's people carrying bits of camouflage. And he was so disappointed that he went off and wrote about the ants, the trees that walk.
Yeah, it really is. Like, there's also in Macbeth, there's Macbeth can't be slain by any man of woman born, and then the whole...
Oh, yeah, and then...
Yeah.
And then yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
It all so clicks into place.
Today like, I learned TIL. Literal. This is very interesting.
So he took those, he saw things in the original that he liked, and he saw things he didn't like, and he was like, what if I made all of these sort of weird prophecies, what if they were literally true? And there comes one of the most popular fantasy worlds of all time.
Yeah, you know, so at the end of the day, he wasn't even really trying to write a story. He set out, essentially, because he was a language professor, and he was writing... Well, essentially, he was developing languages, and he wanted a mythology to go with the languages he was writing, and that's what started him out on the whole thing to begin with. He wanted a mythology to put behind the languages he was creating.
Yeah.
We're trying to say is Lord of the Rings is basically a long series of gags.
Well, also, we're trying to say Lord of the Rings is an example of how to take influence and find your own voice and do it properly. To the point where now everyone else goes, oh, that was good, I'll do my version.
Can I talk about how I sort of interpret these rules and maxims into my comic?
Yeah, go for it.
Because obviously I do a comic that has no continuity, no themes, nothing really connecting comic 1 to comic 2 to comic 3, etc. So there isn't... And there are other comics who do that. There are other webcomics out there before me, and there will be people after me. There are a lot. There's a few dozen doing very, very similar things. So it's not really a question, and I think that is because it's basically anything. I don't think anybody can have the copyright hold on anything. But for me, what it is that every joke that I put into the comic, everything that is basically the selling point of the comic, the thing that makes it funny, I am not aware of anybody ever doing it before. And that's a rule. And I have an ideas list. And if I'm reading my webcomics over my cornflakes in the morning, and I see that any comic that I read has done the same joke, I cross it off. Otherwise... there's really no point me doing what I do. I like to think that I'm creating a new joke every time I do it. It does often turn out that somebody will comment and say, this comic, which you don't read, has done this before. And I'm not... great minds think alike, fools never differ, or maybe some things do end up turn up before. But I am not aware of anybody doing the thing that makes it fun. I will occasionally probably use a pun that's been done before, but I try and put some sort of spin on it. So that's kind of my rule, because that is the only thing in the comic, and if the comic is a joke that somebody's already done, then why does it need to exist if the joke already is out there?
Yeah,
the answer is it doesn't.
Yeah, so I think if you're doing a gag comic, there are basically rules that you don't steal other people's gags. If you're doing something where the gag is essentially slapstick, which I don't really do. But if you have maybe sort of a strip based comic, more like what you do, Zoe, or a bit like Moo and Kia, then you can do then you can have somebody being hit on the head with a frying pan or something similar to be the punchline, and that's obviously more public domain. But if it's a very specific sentence, very specific joke, very specific piece of wordplay, then it really has to be your creation, because that's what you're creating, and that is my rules.
As well as this, when speaking about gag comics, you know, it doesn't. I think this is quite a tough question to answer, because at what point do you begin to sort of own the tone of your comic? Like, you know, I've come across comics that I can tell immediately are Cyanide and Happiness ripoffs. You know, and they can't own cynical, slightly depressing, funny jokes. You know, it's sort of inane that people would try to do that. They say, I like that so much, and so I'm going to give it my own go. But, you know, at what point does it become a copy of something?
I'm not sure you can ever get to a point where it's actually, like, immoral to copy. I would say that stealing a joke is actually immoral. It is theft.
I think it's when you're blatantly, knowingly doing it, because the chances are the internet is a huge, huge place. There's more languages than English in the world, and we've been having cultural creations for thousands upon thousands of years now. The joke you're making is not likely to be the first time that that joke has ever been made, even if the subject and timing of the delivery is slightly different. Odds are you're not making that joke for the first time. You might be aware that you think you are, and in which case that's great, that's fine, and most of your readers might never have seen any of the other iterations of it. That's really cool. But if you go to lukesearle.com, go through the archives, go, ooh, that's a really good joke, right, let's start with my comics and do a new comic based on this one that Luke did. It's been a while back in the archives, he won't notice. That's when it starts to be getting a bit wrong. That's when it's copying, because you're actively consciously doing it.
Sort of going back to that.
My comics are Creative Commons licensed. My comics are Creative Comics licensed. So somebody wants to do something which is acknowledged to be influenced by me, or even uses the images and just edits them in a way to make something else, I'm actually quite cool with that. But do link back and do acknowledge that the attribution part of the Creative Commons, no attribution. Attribution, no derivatives, share alike license 2.0.
I should probably let you know then, Luke. My chat up lines, all you, buddy.
Right, you
know, just proper attribution, yeah.
Wait, it worked for you? I don't know, that's confusing.
I like the notion that all of your comics are just like use or like failed chat up lines. It's like, oh, that didn't work, but I just put it on the internet now.
There is one. That's a story for another day.
Going back to what Matt said there, that, you know, like, oh, all jokes have already been told. I think it's kind of similar to the, you know, there's no original stories kind of thing. It's really about putting your own stamp on it and your own sort of spin, your attitude, tone, whatever. You know what I mean? It's about doing something slightly new rather than being incredibly ambitious and being like, this is it, I'm going to strip away all stories that I've ever heard in my entire life and every single book I've heard and reinvent. And, you know,
to give it
some
an interesting
people do that
analogy, but, yeah. you can take an old song and you can sample it into a brand new song, and you can create something new that's got a familiar feel to it, but it's still got a new and interesting take on it. And that's done all the time. In some places, like in music, a lot of the time it's more obvious and more blatant than others, but culture is basically just taking what we've got around us and presenting it in a way that's visually, audibly, emotionally appealing to us in some way, shape or form. That's all we're doing. We're reacting to what's around us. So of course you're going to get things that are familiar. But it's about being honest with yourself and being honest with your readers and putting something out there that you're truly proud of, and you know that you're not just jacking off somebody else.
I think also if you're going to try and copy Cyanide and Happiness, or you're going to try and copy XKCD, there is another comic doing that quite successfully. Yeah. I.e. Cyanide and Happiness or XKCD. And people are probably going to read that instead.
But at the same time,
they're really popular for a reason.
Yeah, but coming over with popularity and attempting to rip them off, that's what Steph Masinskowski on Sarah Zero has said. In most cases of copying, ripping off, chasing trends and jumping on the bandwagon, there's an implicit understanding between creator and audience, and that understanding is money. Audiences want familiar stuff, creators want money, so it's a win-win situation. Audiences also love repetition, and pablum is easy to digest. Audiences will happily pay for the same rebooted story from the same rebooted property over and over again, even long after the franchises have begun copying themselves. So are we, what we're really looking at here when we're on about XKCD and Cyanide and Happiness Clones is people want to make money. That's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah, I would love to argue with your comment, but I think that it's so true. Like, maybe not, well, no, because in the comics industry, yes, but more obviously in the film industry, like, I regrettably went to see The Amazing Spider-Man, which is a pile of shit, so don't go see it. But I wish I hadn't, because walking out, I was like, I paid for the exact same film that I saw 7 years ago, except worse. Like, but I do think that culturally we're reaching a breaking point, definitely in the film industry, where these reboots are going to be rejected. Do you know they're already planning a Batman reboot?
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah. Well, the reason they're planning a Batman reboot is essentially because Warner Brothers love money. Christopher Nolan has said he definitely doesn't want to do a fourth one. He's done as soon as he's done the trilogy.
He doesn't want to direct it, but he's producing the reboot.
But Christian Bale has said he won't do another film as Batman unless Christian Nolan is directing. So essentially they're losing director and main characters. So they kind of have to reboot it, really, or go back into...
Don't give it, let it,
or essentially turn it into a Bond-type franchise.
Or just let it relax.
I know. I think they could just, quite frankly, give it a bloody rest and give us something else. Finally try and do a decent take on something else for a change. Or, God forbid, create an original IP. You know, a brand new original IP. Not based on a comic, not based on a book, not based on a failed film, not based on a TV series, not based on a chocolate box or a piece of wrapper that you picked up off the floor. Something brand shiny and new. But no. Gone are the days of the early film industry.
The film industry is more influenced by money than with the indie comic industry. Really, you're probably not going to make that much money, and so at least initially. Anyway,
if you really love money, then the indie comic industry isn't necessarily the way to be. Yes, there are some people that do all right, and I'd consider myself to be one of the people that does do kind of all right, but even I don't really make any money from it. There are probably two or three people in the entire country that actually make enough money from it to be worth a shot. And, you know, they're very easily spottable. And there are thousands upon thousands of other people who don't make a penny.
Can I take an example of one? I think the indie comic industry probably rewards, at least in this country anyway, probably rewards originality more than maybe Steph's comments suggested. Take one of the handful of people in the UK who does something, who's making a living. It's My Cardboard Life by Philippa Rice. That is a completely unique comic. Nobody was doing what she did. And she's also very good writer and creates good characters. But it is. A completely original creation, and that is, I think, part of its success. It did something new. It did it well as well. I don't want to say that she just got lucky, but she did something well and she did something new.
You can do well with copying things that are already popular. I think you can do better if you're lucky enough and if you put in enough hard work to sell something genuinely original. As soon as you get that ball rolling, and that's the hardest thing with something new and original, it's getting people to look and getting people to digest it that first time. But once they've done that and they've seen it and it's something new and original that they haven't seen that's actually good, then I think you can almost leapfrog the people that are just copycatting everybody else.
I think that there is no room for success as a copycat in such an industry where the people who are going to be purchasing your stuff is such a small number. I mean, you know, if they read your comic and they like it, they've seen the other comic. Come on, I mean, like, you know, some of the, you know, Marvel and DC are month by month, they're the ones that are selling the most comics, and like the number one comics on the sales chart sell maybe 100,000 copies. 150 if it's a good month. Like, that's not so few people. I know, but what I'm saying is that there's so few people that if you're really ripping off something that's popular, everybody who is going to see your comic has probably already seen the popular comic that you're ripping off.
That's true. Actually, even it comes down to covers. There was an independent film that came out recently, and one of their adverts had a poster that looked almost exactly like one of the covers of 2008. It was picked up within 5 minutes of it going online.
I saw that, yeah.
It's like every time Pixar releases a movie and there's all of a sudden, 6 months later, three or four direct-to-DVD, really low-budget 3D movies that are almost exactly the same story and characters.
Mm-hmm.
There's one called Something Stupid Like a Turtle Story, which came out after Finding Nemo, and others are similar stupid things. And there's a Puss in Boots one that came after DreamWorks put out Puss in Boots as well. Something like Puss in Boots, the real story.
If you're making an indie comic, make sure there is something of you in the comic. Make sure you're not just rehashing other stories. Make sure you are creating something new. Because that's the exciting thing about this largely unprofitable world that we revolve around in, is there are people that are creating new and exciting things that you really want to read, and they're telling jokes that you haven't heard before, they're drawing creating characters which nobody's ever thought of before, and that to me is what makes this whole game, the whole scene, worth following.
And on top of that, like, indie comics are so niche that if you read them, you're probably part of the community. Not necessarily that you're a creator, but you know what I mean? You keep up to date, because you have to keep up to date online or some way in order to find out what's going on with it, when the next convention is, when the next book is coming out from somebody. So everybody sort of knows everybody's business in a real vague way.
Mm.
And people get called out on stuff like this all the time. It's not worth it. Just do something fun and new, for God's sake. For God's sake.
If all else fails, if you're tired and lonely and you're sat in your bedroom and nothing else is working for you, you can't think of a single idea to put on the paper, at the very last resort, LukeSill.com, just hit something random from the archives and you'll be fine.
Yeah, but like I said, I've actually done this. I've clicked random a few times during this. So I will say that I don't think those jokes, and I do Google things as well. If it's specific, if it's mostly a textual joke, I will run it through Google and see if anybody's picked up with the quotation marks in different places. And so I am really. So if you're doing gags, try and avoid doing one for, because, well, it's not good.
Could I just bring in another topic really quickly?
Okay.
I'm so sorry. I just want to talk about copying and art for a second, because we did a lot of talk about writing and intellectual property, all that sort of biz. I'm wondering, at what point do you guys think that copying somebody's art style is copying? Copying is copying. You know what I mean? Where does it cross the line between being influenced by or copying? And is there a line? Yes.
I'm going to say there's probably not a line, because every artist throughout history has learned by aping someone else's style. There isn't an artist alive who has come to art completely without seeing art.
I say there is a line, and that line is blatantly obvious. If you start and do art which essentially looks like it was done by an artist who has a very particular style, and you keep on using that exact same style and never develop it, then that's the line. Copying people's art style, or at least borrowing from other people's art styles, is something that is done by a lot of us to essentially jumpstart ourselves. We tend to take bits from here and there from artists we admire. But if you do it to a point where you're picking one person, you're more or less copying their art style, and you refuse to grow as an artist yourself, and are essentially just lampooning that person's style, then that's the line.
I'm going to disagree, and I'm going to point out the Dandy Nabino with their house art style.
That's different, though.
Is it different?
That's different. That's not.
Yeah, if
that's
you're
not
employed
an individual to style, institution style.
Yeah, it's like having a newspaper having a house style, because they don't want it to look like it's done by any artist. They want it to look like it's done by the Beano or the Dandy.
To an extent, I would agree, but the art style isn't actually enforced. And this is where I was coming from. If you look at Dennis the Menace for the 80s, they had a specific style, but it changes every now and again, and they get a new style. So it's not like to say, oh, this we do it this particular way, because that way it always looks the same. You can always say it's the Dandy and the Beano. Desperate Dan for current generation Dandy readers is completely different to the ones that read it in the 50s. The house style develops, and it depends on the set of artists, but in order to have some kind of continuity, you've got to have some kind of continuity to it.
What if I drew a comic strip and always drew my cats just like that?
Sorry, you broke up.
All my dogs ended up looking. What if I drew a comic strip and I always drew all my cats looking kind of like Garfield? What if then all my dogs looked kind of like Odie? Yeah, they might be a different colour, but essentially they're looking kind of the same. You know, what if all my humans looked exactly like John but from Garfield, but with different hair? You know, I think there's a line.
Yeah, okay, maybe there is a line, but I don't think it's as clear-cut necessarily as we were starting out to make. Yes, I'll agree that if you're doing Garfield and you're calling it something else, then you're doing Garfield. It doesn't matter what the names are.
It doesn't. It could be a survival horror series about cats, but the cats might happen to look like Garfield.
But are you doing that?
You don't have to be copying it to copy it.
Are you doing that to make a joke, or are you doing that because you're copying?
Well, you're doing that because you're trying to copy somebody's art style because you don't necessarily want to develop your own.
The line is, I mean, Control C, Control V, just beyond the line. But if you, and there are, I think it is one of those things that I know it when I see it. But in a way, I think you'd have to get really good at drawing like somebody else. And I'm not entirely sure what your most, unless you were genuinely trying to go for absolute plagiarism and imitate them to the point that you're going to try and sell an original penny arcade strip paid pencil art. There's always going to be something of your innate style in there. I don't think without being seriously, I don't think you're going to stumble upon doing it in an unacceptably somebody else's style, unless you're tracing, rotoscoping, artistically. This is coming. I think you'd have to try really hard to get over the line accidentally.
I'll agree with that, because I still stick with the fact that we all started out by aping someone else. Excuse me. I started out when I was learning to draw. I copied Carlos Esquerra from Judge Dredd. My art style is completely different to his now, but I learnt my line work and the way to bring things out to the foreground by copying Carlos Esquerra.
Yeah, but you know, you see some comics that are like, you know, the characters look like the way the characters in The Lion King look, but it's with wolves, and you know. I don't know. I think that there is a line, and I think that trying to define it would be silly because it's a very blurry line. But I think it's something that people should be conscious of. I don't know what counts as stealing or not. I was just interested in hearing what you guys have to say.
That's fair enough.
Again, I think it's one of these lines that you know damn well when you're crossing it. I think you know in your own head when you're crossing it, and you've just got to be honest to yourself, to be honest.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
This might be a whole other vein of conversation, but what about, what's the line between, drawing fan art and that being profiting from somebody else's intellectual property?
Okay. I'll sell it.
No, I can answer that. If you're going to go about profiting on it, then the moment that you draw fan art, you've violated copyright. But the moment you try and make any kind of money off it or use it to promote your own work, then you're profiting off other people's work.
Okay, so so legally speaking, if you're at a convention and you're selling sketches of Batman,
then you're violating copyright. Whether anyone goes after you is another matter.
Yeah.
But if someone comes up to you and says, would you do a sketch in my sketchbook for me? Can you draw Batman? Probably all right, because they're not going to care for a start, but on a legal term, what have they lost from that? This person wanted your take on that character rather than you trying to sell that character.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, it's probably a whole other discussion.
I was going to say, that actually is going to kind of lead into the topic I want to talk about with you all next week.
All right.
Shall I introduce what we're going to be talking about next week and open the floor to our lovely readers on our blog? I will be posting a general summary of this tomorrow for you all to answer and respond to. But next week, we're going to be talking about the thing that is most vile and that we should never talk about. Next week, we're going to be talking about money. Money in comicking. We're going to be talking about income streams for people, for artists, and what we think about the various sources of income that an artist can go after. This is partially inspired by conversations that always crop up when it comes to conventions and things like, is fan art something that you should actually be doing and making money from or not? And it's partially due to the news this week that Penny Arcade, one of the biggest players in the business, has tried to essentially, well, bring back the tip jar, but this time for the big person. The tip jar is something that's used by the small webcomics creators a hell of a lot to fund their things, but essentially, Penny Arcade have gone to Kickstarter to do what is essentially a grown-up tip jar to try and remove all the adverts from their website and fund the part of their business that is normally funded by advertisements for a full year from their fans directly. And I want to hear what you all think about that, because I've had discussions with a few people and it's kicked up some very interesting topics. So I'd love to hear what everybody thinks.
Oh, we shouldn't do that right now. Should we do that right now since it's fresh, or should we leave it till the next?
I think we should leave it till a bigger conversation next week, but I would really love to hear what the listeners would like to say on the blog as soon as possible, and maybe we can answer to the odd one there before the time, but I'd love to get as many thoughts on this as possible, so I'll be popping this on Facebook as well as the blog, and just let us know what you think.
Cool. Just heads up, Matt's preview blog is just going to be a giant dollar sign with a red X through it, so prepare yourself.
I'm still confused about this idea of money. What's this money thing that apparently you get through comics?
So yes, money and revenue streams for comics artists is what we're talking about next week.
Okay guys, we're coming up on the 40-minute mark for this, so let's round up a bit.
I was just going to say, ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the Web Comics Company, where we have all been choking, speaking like robots, and talking about copying in comics. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we hope you'll all pop by over to the blog to leave your comments for next week's topic, which is money and income sources in webcomics and comics in general. So I've been Matt Dyson. Goodbye.
I have been Luke Searle of LukeSearle.com. Thank you for listening.
It's me, Luke Healy of LukeWHealy.com.
And I've been Zoe Kirk Robinson of ZoeRobinson.com. Thank you very much for listening to the Web Comics Company podcast. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Remember, kids, look both ways before you cross the road.
No, don't. In the future,
remember to look three ways because anyone could be landing.
Remember, kids, knowing is half the battle.
We're not in the 80s anymore.
Oh, but I really liked the G.I. Joe PSAs.
You don't need to know anything anymore. You just look it up on Google.
Thank you for listening to the Webcomics Company podcast.
Hello, good evening, good night, or whatever time it is for you. This is the Webcomics Company podcast. I'm Zoe Kirk Robinson, and I'm here with three fantastic people. We have, and, well, let's start again.